This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
2 weeks ago in Porepunkah, Victoria, police were killed in a violent standoff linked to a sovereign citizen movement, a group that's been quietly gaining followers here in Australia. And what was once dismissed as fringe has now become a really serious concern, raising some questions about how deep distrust in authority can run. Well, Associate Professor of Politics at Deakin University is Josh Roos, who joins me now. Josh, welcome to Drive.
Afternoon.
Now, for those who haven't come across it before, how would you describe this movement?
At its core, it's an anti-government extremist movement. It has a really strong set of conspiratorial beliefs that the government's a corporation, that it enslaves people, but you can free yourself from being enslaved by declaring yourself sovereign or a free man. And at its core, you can then allocate all your societal responsibilities and financial responsibilities to a straw man, and that then enables you to live a free life.
So where do these ideas come from? I mean, they must have originated somewhere.
Yeah, they've really come from the United States. Everyone talks about the 60s and 70s as this period of counterculture and rebellion and hippies, but at the same time, there was also a lot of patriots movements, anti-tax movements, militia movements, the Christian identitarian movement, which was also a deeply racist arm of extreme Christian fundamentalism. And it's all intertwined and over time settled on these core notions of the government as the enemy and your ability to free yourself from government.
Now, how far has it spread across the country?
Sovereign citizen ideas have always been here since the 60s and 70s. People talk about Prince Leonard of Hutt River Province and his big sovereign land back in the 60s or 70s. I think it was in Western Australia. And on the outskirts of a lot of country towns, a lot of people will know a sovereign citizen. But what's occurred, particularly since the pandemic, has been, and since social media, has been a significant increase in not only people who are gaining access to the ideas online, but then building online communities and then organising in real time, face to face. So we're now talking about a movement that's gone from maybe several hundred, maybe the low thousands, into the tens of thousands.
What kind of person, Josh, is drawn into something like this? Is there a common thread in, I suppose, their background or their experiences or their worldview?
For the most part, they're not people who are doing particularly well in life. These are people who are looking for something that explains the challenges that they're facing. Often they're in financial difficulty. We know that a good significant portion of them live on in either the outer suburbs or in towns, regional Australia. And you've got to think about why these ideas might be appealing and attractive, and it's for people who might otherwise feel disempowered and a little bit helpless. And this narrative that sovereign citizen ideology in a very broad sense gives is that it's not your fault, it's the government's fault, but you can free yourself by rejecting that government authority. And so if you're desperate and down on your luck and life's not working out for you, and you're not particularly educated or part of a broader community, you might feel a bit marginalised, then this is a really good solution, because it not only builds you a community instantaneously, but gives you a reason for why you're facing those challenges.
Josh, I'm just thinking, social media is really the perfect storm, isn't it? It comes along and it feeds this information to people that perhaps haven't been taught the skills to be able to critically analyse that information and whether it's real or not, and then they find themselves believing in these movements. Would you say that's fair?
Yeah, that's a really good point. And in particular, I mean, we talk about young people and radicalisation online, but it's kind of the inverse with sovereign citizens in that it's primarily older people who are being pulled into these movements. We're talking people in their 40s, 50s, 60s who are being drawn in, and a lot of it's through that online engagement. And sovereign citizen movements like My Place, which come across as quite benign and friendly and about community and belonging, are really good at reeling those people in through talking about farmers markets and wellness and community. But at their core, you've only got to dig beneath the surface. And at their heart, they're a sovereign citizen movement, talks about straw men, talks about a revolution, we're at war with the government. They have some really deep conspiratorial beliefs, but they're also extremely anti-minority, bigoted in just about every way possible. And so they reel these people into this, through breadcrumbing, into this deeper sort of quite a darker place. And that's what drives a lot of the explosive violence.
We're chatting with Associate Professor Josh Roos from Deakin University about the rise of the sovereign citizen movement in Australia and how deep distrust of institutions can turn into violence, as we saw, sadly, in Pōpunkā on August the 26th. Josh, what are the signs? If someone's listening and they're thinking, you know what, I'm not sure, they don't specifically say they're part of the, you know, this group or this Facebook page, whatever it is part of this movement, what are the signs that we should look out for?
Superficially, it might be the vocabulary that people are employing. They might talk about, being free men. They might talk about straw men. They might talk about not recognising the authority of the government. And that could be just a little seg into a much deeper sort of vocabulary that they're employing with their cohort. It could be the symbols that they're employing. Often these symbols look like government symbols. They look authentic, but they're clearly not from the government. There's another very quick way. Also, the use of pseudo-law. So by that, we mean the way that sovereign citizens take their deep beliefs about the way that law's been constructed to enslave people, and then attempt to counter that the law through their own legal parlance, which is nonsensical, which really attempts to outwit the judges and magistrates. And they'll send that back to the courts, they'll send it to local councils. All layers of government are being inundated with this. And so if you see someone you know or care about who might have an official looking letter that doesn't make sense, that's another really clear indicator.
I would have thought that it would have fizzled out as people see that, you know, they don't get anywhere legally with it. And I'm wondering, what makes them think that they're above the law?
It's the deep conviction that people who are drawn into the movements sort of feel. Some people doubtlessly fail dismally when they do encounter the court process. And for some, that might be enough to say, well, that didn't work. But for those people who are drawn into the community and that belonging that it offers them, and that sense of getting away with something, we know that that's a really important element. And so some colleagues up at Griffith University, Tina Murphy, Kieran, have done some great work up there in looking at the personality features of people who are sovereign citizens. And so they've found that anti-authoritarian personality traits are also pretty critical. And so you take that perfect storm of disenfranchisement, marginalisation, anger, negative experiences with government, particularly in regional Australia, where your only encounter with government could be fines. It could be some form of law enforcement. It might not necessarily be government services. And you take that and you throw it together with a set of beliefs that tell you that it's not your fault, that it's the government's fault, then, you know, you're likely to have some loyalty to that idea and those people who are the community around it.
Is there any way back for people who've gone deep into this mindset, or once you've reached that level of belief, is it almost impossible to return?
Look, there's no set of beliefs through which people can't pull themselves, but it is not unlike a form of fundamentalist Christianity or Islam, in that it becomes all-consuming and almost like a faith, in that, you know, everything makes sense through this prism that they employ. It really does come down to a deeper, like what we're seeing here is a symptom of a much larger problem, which is a failure of government over a prolonged period of time to engage adequately in our regions and our outer suburbs, and to build communities and a sense of citizenship and belonging in those areas, because we've stripped regional Australia of infrastructure and funding over a prolonged period of time as the cities grow. So in part, it means we've got to reinvest and also look at opportunities for people who are living in these towns to stay there. If you go to a lot of these places like Bright, which coincidentally or not, is just down the road from Pōpunkā, I mean, the average house price there has gone up exponentially as Airbnb investors from the cities have bought there and lease out, and people who live there can't even often afford to buy there anymore. So there's an exploitation of regional Australia as well that feeds this. That's not the only explanation, but it's a critical part of the conversation we've got to have.
So just on that, how should we respond to people who we realise are part of this sovereign citizen movement without escalating? Because it sounds like they're almost quite close-minded in terms of their views, and it might be difficult to get in there. What can we do to sort of not escalate things?
I mean, it's probably two layers to that. And the first, never confront a sovereign citizen, like particularly if you're in a position of authority or working in a position, because it can escalate dramatically from 0 to 100. As we've seen, unfortunately, but also in the United States, there's been many such cases where you confront them and they will aggressively fight back. That's probably the first layer. But the second is if it's a family member or someone you care about, you don't want to just tell people they're wrong. I mean, that's the first mistake is telling someone that their set of beliefs is false and here's why, because they're never going to engage with that. You've got to almost, love them or support them as best you can anyway, and slowly offer them something that they're getting from that community, which is belonging, respect, standing, and start to slowly pull them out until they can see something else that they could feasibly belong to, and potentially work out the challenges that they're facing that have pulled them into that in the first place. It's a slow process. It requires community and a network of support or loved ones. You can't do it by yourself often, but it is hard work, unfortunately.
It's so it all comes down to that basic human need. We want to belong, don't we? We just got to belong to the right people.
That's right. It's a critical element of the equation here. I mean, it's not just sovereign citizen ideology that people are being drawn into, and that is a very dangerous ideology. People are drawn into all sorts of extremist beliefs, and we're seeing the polarization that's playing out now online on an epic scale. After the Charlie Kirk shooting, where it's now, gone binary, you're with us or against us. And so we've got to take that step back and attempt to, continue to build relationships.
Josh, really important conversation. Thanks for your time today.
Thanks for your time. Cheers.
Thank you. That was Associate Professor Josh Roos from Deakin University.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.